Hi, this is Eric Crossley, and welcome to Making a Difference, episode 33, Celebrate. Now comes the hard part. Thanks for joining us post-election. Today, November 15th, we're in the middle of the month. Big thanks to Dayron Arias, as always, my producer and partner down in Florida, and my partner here in Maryland, Senior Social. You'll hear more from later. I wanted to mention a couple things before we start our 33rd episode. First of all, the election is now 12 days ago because today is Sunday, and it was a Tuesday earlier, much earlier in November, and that Joe Biden was announced the winner of this election 8 days ago. We'll get more to that in just a minute. But I want to say, first of all, before we get started with the meat of the show, on Making a Difference, we want to say thanks to Anchor, Google Plus, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Casts, Facebook, Twitter, any place you're listening. Thanks so much for joining us. We're excited to be here post-election and in the near future, post-Donald Trump, anyway, after January 20th. I want to say thanks to our top five countries, and they pretty much stayed fairly the same recently. Top five, U.S., of course, number one, Canada, number two, the U.K., number three, Germany, number four, and our friends down under, Australia, number five. Thanks so much for all you folks there. And I also wanted to mention some new countries. We have Romania, Kuwait, Chechnya, and Egypt. So we have quite an exotic lineup. And I want to say welcome to everybody. And thanks again. We are here to celebrate and also to talk about some things that are not so celebratory. But I wanted to start today because we really haven't given enough credit and enough time to our president-elect and our vice president-elect. So let's start right now and let's hear from President-elect Joe Biden.
First of all, I'm letting them know that America's back. We're going to be back in the game. It's not American alone. Number one, I've had the opportunity to speak with now six world leaders. The response has been very fulsome, energetic, and they're all looking forward to being able to, from Great Britain to France to Germany to Canada, et cetera, and Ireland. So I feel good about the ability to. I said when we announced that the next president is going to inherit a divided country and a world in disarray. The reception and welcome we've gotten around the world from our allies and our friends has been real. I'm having a number of other calls to return, and so I feel confident that we're going to be able to put America back in the place of respect that it had before.
Okay, that's President-elect Biden. What I think is important about those comments from Joe Biden, President-elect Biden, I will call him that from now on, every chance we get that opportunity, but our future president, is that over the past almost 4 years under Donald Trump, we have, of course, suffered terribly on the world stage because of having a buffoon as president, somebody who was impeached, as we discussed fully on this show many, many times, and should have been convicted in the Senate, but didn't even have a trial in the Senate for the first time in history. The Senate did not have a trial at all, and they found him not guilty because the Republicans voted with Donald Trump and for Donald Trump and kissed his behind every chance they got. So the president-elect, Joe Biden, with the comments that I think really encapsulate what we're looking forward to with the new president starting in January. Now, I want to mention that Georgia this past week was the last state to be called in the 2020 presidential election, and that was won by President-elect Biden. It gave him another 16 electoral votes to expand his lead over Donald Trump. Now, Biden's current advantage of 14,172 votes in Georgia is expected to withstand any recount changes. As we've discussed on the show before, recounts, generally, if they change any votes, it's a few hundred at the most. This is over 14,000 vote difference. Also, Biden has been projected to flip Arizona, which has 11 electoral votes. Before Biden, Arizona had selected a Democrat one time since 1948. That was Bill Clinton in 1996. So keep that in mind. Arizona, one time since 1948, before this election, had selected a Democrat, and that happened this time. More Americans voted in the 2020 election than in any other election in more than 100 years. Now, when they say that, this is the most Americans that have voted in any election, period. But they're saying that as far as a percentage of the electorate, this is the most in more than 100 years. Nearly 65% of the voting eligible population cast a ballot, a figure projected to increase as final votes continue to be tabulated. The final electoral vote tally, 306 votes for President-elect Biden, 232 for Trump. It's the same tally of electoral votes that Trump beat Hillary Clinton by in 2016, 306 to 232. It's reversed, and it is truly poetic justice to see the numbers reversed. And now Trump called that a landslide, by the way, in 2016. And now he's saying that he still hasn't lost the election, and he still hasn't conceded the election, even though even Republicans at this point, 12 days after the election, are saying enough is enough. We have to move on. The popular vote. Now, remember, I've talked time and time and time again about the fact that Hillary Clinton in 2016 won the popular vote by nearly 3 million votes, but still lost the Electoral College. Now, Donald Trump said that that was a landslide victory for him. Losing the popular vote was apparently not the landslide. It was the Electoral College. And now the same thing has happened in 2020. The final, close to final anyway, popular vote shows a record number of votes between the two people, between, of course, President-elect Biden and former president-to-be Trump. The final tally that we have right now shows that Joe Biden with 78,664,203 votes and Donald Trump 73,108,131 votes. The margin between the two candidates this time is nearly double what we had in 2016 when Hillary Clinton won by almost 3 million votes, because Joe Biden is ahead right now by 5,556,072 votes, over 5.5 million vote lead. That, folks, is a landslide. Now, I want former president to be Donald Trump to come out and say, oh, you know what? This is a landslide too. And not only that, I lost by over 5.5 million votes on top of the Electoral College, which was 306 to 232, which was the same that I won in the landslide by in 2016. You see, that's not going to happen, but I think it would be very interesting if it did. Now, we talked a little bit before about Joe Biden. He won the presidency on the 48th anniversary of his first election to the Senate in November of 1972. We wanted to talk a little bit before we get into, unfortunately, having to talk about the coronavirus, a little bit about Kamala Harris. She is the first woman vice president, of course, in our history. And it comes 100 years, over 100 years now, but the 100th anniversary just happened of women's suffrage. And women's suffrage was the first time ever in 1920, 100 years ago, when women had the right to vote in the United States. A lot of people don't realize that it was that recently, but I want to hear right now from the vice president-elect, Kamala Harris, and what she has to say, because her words are truly breathtaking, and she is going to be a magnificent vice president for us. So let's listen to Kamala Harris, vice president-elect.
And to the woman most responsible for my presence here today, my mother, Shyamala Gopalan Harris, who is always in our hearts. When she came here from India at the age of 19, she maybe didn't quite imagine this moment. But she believed so deeply in an America where a moment like this is possible. And so I am thinking about her and about the generations of women, black women, Asian, white, Latina, Native American women, who throughout our nation's history have paved the way for this moment tonight. Women who fought and sacrificed so much for equality and liberty and justice for all, including the black women who are often too often overlooked, but so often prove they are the backbone of our democracy.
And that is our next vice president. I have lived, I'm 62, almost 63 years old now, I'm proud to say, and I've lived to see a lot in this country. I was with my youngest son in 2009, in Washington, D.C., in nearby Washington, D.C., where I attended with him in the 20-degree cold with a wind chill of, excuse me, in the minus 10 to minus 15 figures. I was out with 9 hours with my son at the inauguration of the first African-American president, President Barack Obama, in January of 2009. And now 12 years later, we are going to see for the first time Kamala Harris, former Senator Harris, will be the first woman to be president or vice president. She becomes the first vice president. And she talked about a generation of women, black, Asian, white, Latina, Native American, women of every race, every background. Her background is from actually South Asia. So she's a black woman, but also with an Indian background. Her mother came here at the age of 19. The stories of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are the stories we didn't really get a chance to hear enough during the election. And that's also, we were talking a lot, trying to emphasize how much we needed to get rid of Trump. Now we need to emphasize the good people that we have at the top, because we've had such awful people with Donald Trump and Mike Pence at the top for the past 4 years. So I want to say congratulations to Kamala Harris for her win and the win for women everywhere. Now, again, the 19th Amendment was in 1920, and that guaranteed women the right to vote in the United States. So it's amazing that this is happening on the 100th anniversary of that incredible moment. So we want to say to Kamala Harris and to women throughout the United States, congratulations, and we're very excited for you. We're also excited for America, because so much has changed. We always emphasize and talk so much about the negative, and we do that a lot on this show too, for good reason, because there are a lot of things that we need to be concerned about, and a lot of things that we have to be aware of. One of them is the fact that we have made a lot of inroads in the past few years with the first African-American president, with Barack Obama, for 8 years, starting in 2009. And now we have a woman, Kamala Harris, the first woman vice president ever. And of course, the first woman of color. So again, congratulations. It's a fantastic moment for the United States, and we're excited about it. Now, I wanted to mention real quick before we go to talking a little bit more about, unfortunately, the latest on the coronavirus, is the president still continues to not concede this election. However, he was on Twitter today, Sunday the 15th, this morning, and apparently inadvertently, half-heartedly conceded the election, because he said something about Biden winning. Yeah, he later said that he didn't concede anything. And his protesters were in D.C. over the past few days, being met, by the way, in Washington, D.C., by a lot of protesters who were pro-Joe Biden, President-elect Biden, and pro-Kamala Harris, Vice President-elect Harris, because Washington, D.C. Went 90% for Joe Biden. So the people who live in Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, there's three electoral votes there, were not real pleased to see the Trump people show up. And there were some problems over the past few days. Before we close it off, and I am going to, and again, we're not going to play any more clips of Donald Trump ever again. Unless he's arrested, then we'll play his clip from jail when he makes an announcement. Or if he's about to be executed, I do want to play his last words. You think I'm joking, but in actuality, again, keep in mind all that we have on Donald Trump. And don't even think about Joe Biden, about pardoning Donald Trump once you become president, under any circumstances. Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon. After Nixon resigned in August of 1974, Nixon was a criminal and would have been convicted in the Senate after being impeached, but he resigned. And just a few months later, the new president, President Gerald Ford, in 1975, pardoned him. Actually, in late 74. And a pardon, of course, we know means you're exonerated of all crimes, no matter what you did. Even if you did what Donald Trump did when he said or wanted to do, Donald Trump said years ago in 2016 that, you know, he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and kill them and his supporters wouldn't care. That we thought that was a, you know, hyperbolic and a joke and stuff. Now in 2020, we realize that 70 million people voted for him. And that's probably true, unfortunately, for a good part of those 70 million people. 72% of Republicans, this election was certified 8 days ago. 72% of Republicans, as of yesterday, Friday, or 2 days ago, Friday the 13th, 70% of Republicans said, you know, this election, we don't believe it. We think it's fraud. There's not one iota of evidence of any fraud in this election. And here's the proof, folks. This comes to us, thank you, the Department of Homeland Security. That's under the president, by the way, has called this election the most secure in American history. This comes to us from Axios.com, from Shauna Chen. Now, there's a photo that President Trump, and we'll show it on online, on Facebook and other places. In 2018, President Trump signed the act that established the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, that's CISA, CISA, in 2018. A top committee made up of officials from the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency and its election partners refuted President Trump's claim of widespread voter fraud and irregularities in a statement Thursday, just 3 days ago, calling the election, quote, this is coming from Trump's own Homeland Security board that he appointed in 2018. They said, quote, this election in 2020 was the most secure in American history. The most secure in American history. They go on to say, there is no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. Members of the Election Infrastructure Government Coordinating Executive Committee said in a statement, voting systems were made secure through pre-election testing, state certification of voting equipment, and the U.S. Election Assistance Commission's certification of equipment. The joint statement acknowledged, quote, opportunities for misinformation and urged voters to seek out election officials as trusted voices. I will say it time and time and time again. There is no proof of any fraud, not just any proof of any substantial fraud, as we keep hearing in the news media. There's no proof of any fraud. And Trump's own Department of Homeland Security, a commission that he appointed in 2018, because I guess he thought maybe they were going to help him in 2020, they said there is no evidence of any voting system deleted or lost votes. They said it's the most secure election in United States history. That's the election we just had 12 days ago. That's the election that Donald Trump still hasn't conceded. And he's also talking about running in 2024. Now, in 2024, former President Trump is either going to be in jail or prison or dead. And I'm not wishing him dead or wishing him ill health. I'm just saying he's not in good health to start with. But he'll probably be in prison, and he could be facing execution for treason. We talked about this time and time and time again on this show. Okay? And we're done talking about Donald Trump and his garbage, because he's past news now. He lost by over 5.5 million votes. Okay? He lost the Electoral College, 306 to 232. The same landslide that he won by in 2016, he lost by this time in 2020. Joe Biden is our new president, January 20th. Kamala Harris is our new vice president, January 20th. Donald Trump is our former president. And Mike Pence, by the way, is going to be our former vice president. I find it interesting, before we go to break, folks, just to mention that we haven't heard anything from Mike Pence recently. I think he's still vice president until January 20th, but I'm going to have to check on that. We'll be right back. Hi, Eric Crossley, back with the second part of What Making a Difference, episode 33, Celebrate. Now the hard part. I wanted to mention just briefly again before we get on to the other part of the show. This comes to us from the Washington Post. Now, again, Trump lost at the ballot box, but he continues to fight this thing, and legal challenges aren't going any better. On Thursday, six American service members were killed in a helicopter crash during a peacekeeping mission in Egypt. Tropical Storm Eta made landfall in North Florida, contributing to severe flooding. The number of Americans infected with the novel coronavirus continued at a record-setting pace, sending the stock market tumbling. Following the latest on election 2020 at the White House, President Trump spent the day, as he has most others this week, sequestered from public view, tweeting grievances, falsehoods, and misinformation about the election results and about Fox News's coverage of him. Now, the president's very upset about Fox News, because that was his home network back in 2016 for that election. And this time they actually started reporting somewhat evenly. Now, neither he nor his aides briefed reporters on the news of the day or reacted to Democratic leaders who accused Republicans of imperiling the pandemic response by refusing to accept reality over election results. The contrast between the nation grappling with an ongoing global crisis and a president consumed with his own political problems highlighted a fundamental contradiction at the heart of Trump's assault on the integrity of the U.S. election system. He is leveraging the power of his office in a long-shot bid to stay in the job while ignoring many of the public duties that comes with it. Whenever Trump loses, he baselessly claims it was rigged. For years, Trump has cited fraud or a rigged process to explain away his losses. It seems clear Trump has checked out, said Norman Ornstein, a political scientist at the Conservative American Enterprise Institute, who's criticized Trump. It's not like the guy has shown a great interest in governing for 4 years. So to expect he will now accelerate the pace is a little fanciful. It's pretty clear he feels wounded. Under those circumstances, the idea he's going to pay more attention to the details of governance is ridiculous. So I think we can cut that and just say that, you know, the president is the president and we have to move on and he has to move on. We have 66 days now until we have a new president. President Biden takes over. President Trump will eventually admit defeat. He has done that more or less on Twitter today on Sunday the 15th, but he is not going to concede because in his mind, whatever's left of his mind, this election was rigged. Now, we said celebrate, and I did want to mention again, you know, we do celebrate the congratulations to our future president and vice president. We have to talk about the week's not so good news. And that's the continued problem with COVID-19, with the coronavirus. We have this week high per capita rates in many states and record per capita rates. Per capita means per 100,000 people. And let me just go over a couple of those numbers. First of all, as of today, and this is as of today, the 15th of November, we now have lost over 246,000 people in the United States to the coronavirus, and over 11 million cases have been reported. The president made a few comments about the vaccine coming out in April yesterday, before he made his first public statement since the election yesterday. And then he also thanked his supporters for coming to Washington, because they're going to be there when he takes his second term. I mean, he's completely lost his mind, and he's ignoring what's happening in the country. And we still have 66 days to go. 246,000 people dead in the United States. Over 11 million cases have been reported. By early November, the country was recording more new cases than ever, well over 100,000 per day. And now we're going to talk a little bit about some good news, because we want to have good news also this week on this front, along with the election good news. And this comes to us from Mandy Oaklander. And it's a little bit about the vaccine, why Pfizer's vaccine won't fix everything instantly. This week began with a rare piece of pandemic good news. Pfizer announced that its two-part COVID-19 vaccine is 90% effective at preventing disease, making it the most promising candidate yet. If borne out by the yet-to-be-published data and granted approval by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, a vaccine with efficacy levels that high could make a serious dent in a pandemic that continues to set new records daily in the U.S. and ravage the rest of the world. Let me just add here real quick that, unfortunately, new numbers have come out since, and that's the problem with doing a show is there's always new numbers, and it's always been going in the wrong direction, especially recently. The last reports we had, today is Sunday, on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, are that we've had over 150,000 new cases reported, and then 160,000 reported as of today in the last 24 hours in the United States. The death rate is continuing to go up also. But meanwhile, creating a vaccine and getting it approved are only the first steps. The asterisk is that actually getting the vaccine to the people who need it will not be easy, says his colleague Jamie Ducharme, who recently wrote about the challenges facing Pfizer's vaccine. Among them, the genetic material called mRNA used to make the vaccine breaks down unless it's kept at ultra low temperatures. So the vaccine must be stored at 94 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, requiring expensive specialized freezers. Let's pause there for a second. Keep that in mind. That's something that hasn't been reported a lot. We're reporting it here. The vaccine, however it comes out, and we are confident that by spring we're going to have a vaccine, and hopeful that everyone will get, in the United States will be vaccinated by the summer, but they have to keep this vaccine at 94 below zero Fahrenheit. So it is a lot of expensive equipment. At this point, under our new president, our new vice president, money cannot be a factor in this. Now that complicates the rollout logistics for under-resourced communities like rural areas, nursing homes, and developing nations. A lack of fancy freezers isn't the only obstacle. Dosing out Pfizer's vaccine requires a strong type of glass that's in short supply, and distributing it requires dry ice, which is already in high demand because it's used in food delivery. Even once the vaccine is approved, distributing it will still be a huge logistical challenge, Jamie says. Some potential solutions have been proposed: centralizing vaccine distribution in large vaccine depots, as some U.S. states are considering, may make it easier to corral resources, but doing so comes with additional problems like staffing, cost, and long travel times for vaccine recipients. Other hardier vaccines could also eventually prove effective, and further medical innovation may eventually yield a version of the Pfizer vaccine that doesn't require such extreme storage measures, but that, of course, will take time. So the bottom line here is we do have some good news, and it's just unfortunate it's not immediate good news, But we do know that a vaccine is being developed. We have one right now that's 90% effective, but it's a two-step vaccine. And we need to get a one-step vaccine, and we need to get it over 90% effective. So these are things we're going to continue to work on under our new administration. The only question is, how much damage are we going to be doing in the next 66 days under Donald Trump, who at this point doesn't really care about the 246,706 people who've died or the 11 million plus people in the United States who have the coronavirus. We had to talk, we talked about the per capita a little bit before. I want to go into that in more detail. What the per capita means is cases per 100,000 people. Now, places like California, New York, Florida, large states are going to have huge numbers of cases and unfortunately also large numbers of deaths. But what we had to focus on now, and this is as of November 14th, just yesterday, we looked at the numbers. This is the 7-day average of daily new cases per 100,000 residents, okay? So we start with the lowest population state, which is Wyoming. Wyoming only has 578,759 people. So Wyoming has under 600,000 people. That's less people that live in my city, Baltimore, or down in Miami. But their cases in the past 7 days have increased 50% to 121 per 100,000. The other bad news comes from Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a Democratic governor, but a Republican legislature and a Republican judicial system. In Wisconsin, the Republicans have time and time again prevented the governor of Wisconsin from slapping down new hard mandated mask rules to help prevent the spread of coronavirus. And so what's happened in Wisconsin? Because of Republicans, this is directly because of Republicans in the legislature in Wisconsin and the judges, the conservative judges that were appointed, they're taking away these rules. You can't have a face mask rule in Wisconsin. You can't limit restaurants. Guess what happened in Wisconsin last week? You know what? Their death rate went up 21,000. And 21%, I'm sorry, their infection rate went up 21%, 119 per 100,000. That's a state of almost 6 million people. So 119 per 100,000, that's a lot of people. That's over 7,000 people infected in Wisconsin. It gets worse. Iowa, another state. And these are all Republican states, by the way. Every one of these states is a solid red Republican state and voted solidly for President Trump, just to let you know. Not saying I want anything to happen to them, but now they're coming due because South Dakota just had that big festival a couple of months ago. And guess what? South Dakota has 884,659 people. They have 169 new cases per 100,000, and that's up 28% in that 7-day period. As another example, North Dakota is the worst. It's a small state also. 762,062 people plus 4%, but their infection rate is 184 per 100,000. And that is a startling, startling number. As an example, in the United States, the overall infection rate is 43 per 100,000. So North Dakota is over four times that infection rate. And North Dakota, South Dakota, all of these states, all these states that are showing huge spikes in coronavirus are states that, you know, Republicans control, and they said, we don't want to mandate masks. We don't want to make it mandatory. It's, you know, it's against democracy. It's against the Constitution. And now what's happening is their hospitals are at 100% capacity in North Dakota and South Dakota. Wisconsin is nearly 100%. They don't have room in these intensive care wards for anybody else in these states. These are small states, okay? So now they're having to make new room. Now here in Maryland, we still have cases, but we don't have the infection rate anywhere near what these states have per 100,000 because masks were mandated by our Republican governor, by the way, who's a more or less moderate. And he said, you know what? It doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican. We all have to try to live. And so the problem with this country is it's a hodgepodge of everything. And we're seeing record numbers, okay? We see 18 states, most of them in the Midwest, reported record numbers of hospitalizations just this week, a catastrophic surge that experts say is rooted in a distrust of the government. And that's where we are, folks. That's where we are on November 15th, 2020. You know, we have a new president and vice president, but we don't yet. And I told you the hardest time, I said time and time again, even if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris win this election, we still have to wait till January 20th. We still have 66 days. So we have to be vigilant and watch things and stay on top of our congressmen and our senators and everybody that you can contact and let them know that we're watching things, okay? And the results of this election are official. Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, is our 46th president. Kamala Harris, former senator from California, is our first woman vice president. Congratulations to everybody. As I said, celebrate. Now the hard part. I'm Eric Crossley. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back in another week with another show. Take it easy. Enjoy football. You know, don't root for Seattle. I'm a 49er fan, and I don't like the Seahawks. My producer in Florida, who should be a Dolphins fan, by the way, is rooting for the Seahawks. The Dolphins are 5-3 and playing. I don't understand what the deal is. He doesn't even like football. Anyway, the 49ers have had a bad season because of injuries, so we'll move on about that. Talk to you next week. Thanks a lot. I'm Eric Crossley, and almost Thanksgiving time. Have a great day.